Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 31st, 2006. Today's session is entitled Slavery Today, presented by Lowell Satry, number SAL 2006-01. Let's listen in.
Talk about why does that happen? What do you know about slavery today? I'm just curious. I mean, what, Sarah? You know, what do you know about slavery today? I mean, as it is in the world today.
That it exists, that it is more prevalent than I have an imagination for, and that it comes in a variety of disguises.
Anybody else want to comment about what they know of slavery today, if you were to ask about slavery today?
I know it's active in some countries like Mauritania, in which just really rampant and very difficult for women to escape because they'll get brought back.
Any others? Any of the others of you?
It's insidious.
Pardon?
It's insidious.
Yeah, it is insidious.
You don't even know that, and suddenly you're a victim of slavery.
Yes. And it happens all too often, as I will try to give some examples of it.
Like Sarah?
Another Sarah. Yeah.
We're Sarah 2. This is the Sarah.
One and two.
A and one. As you said, people, it's not like they're captured and made slaves. They sign agreements that they are either not honored or they can't possibly keep.
Anything else? Yeah, Paul.
I know that our government approves of several big-time clothing companies that have put their whole industry out into slave territory that's protected the United States, and they can say, this is USA made, but they don't have to obey any of the USA work laws and wage laws and so on. It's slavery.
Anything else? But, yeah.
I know in the Middle East where I live that there are maids that are hired and work in these homes, and they don't get any time off, and they really are caught in that villa for the rest of their time.
Probably came from the Philippines or something.
A lot of them do.
The Philippines tends to be an area for that type of work. Yeah.
I have read that they ship women here from the Philippines and from other countries, and are farmed out. Actually, in slave conditions. Mm-hmm. They tell them they're going to be married to somebody or they're going to get their citizenship, and this doesn't happen.
Yeah, they're recruited under conditions that, I mean, they are not aware of what's going to happen to them. They're promised jobs, especially elsewhere.
I think human trafficking, which sounds like slavery to me, is probably next to drug dealing the biggest criminal activity in the world.
Yes, and it is one of the least regulated by governments. And we'll take a look at that later on, because that's an important term, trafficking.
Many times it involves children.
Often involves children, yes. Yeah. So it is insidious, and it is far more widespread than is normally recognized. Free the Slaves, which is an anti-slavery society located in Washington, D.C., estimates that there are 27 million slaves in the world today.
Wow.
27 million. Now, one of the ways I just want to mention.
Can you put that in any kind of perspective of when we think of, you know, the colonial era and slavery in terms of percentage of population? Because 27 million today.
Okay, I can't do that, but I will just give you one thing.
Okay.
From 1500 to 1850.
Okay.
There were about 11 million slaves that were transported from West Africa to North, Central, and South America. So that was over, that was over 350 years, there were about 11 million slaves. Now that's the number that made it across. There would have been far more captured in the interior because probably anywhere from a third up to a half or more died in the process from being gained in the interior.
That's just African.
And that's just West Africa.
Yeah,
because East Africa and Central Africa probably had far more slaves taken. Because they ended up in North Africa and the Middle East.
So if that was just one part of Africa, I'm just trying to get a hold on the handle on this 27 million. Is it actually a bigger number? Or is it probably about, were there at least that many slaves than two?
There were a lot of slaves because until
the late
18th century, everywhere basically in the world there were conditions of slavery that were, they were totally legal.
Right.
I mean, that's the biggest difference, is that now today, in today's world, slavery is illegal everywhere. Slavery is not legal in any nation in the world.
I didn't know. She mentioned moratorium or something. But
it's not legal.
It's not legal.
It's not legal. Anywhere in the world. And that is one of the differences, I mean, now compared to the 18th and even into the 19th century, is that there were large areas where it was still legal. Now it's not legal, but it is still, it continues. Now, part of that number of 27 million comes from a redefinition of slavery. Until actually well into the 20th century, slavery was essentially called chattel slavery. Chattel slavery, or indeed a slave with property that was owned, was chattel slavery. And that is what we are acquainted with in the history of the United States. I mean, the slaves we had in this country, the slaves in Central America, South America, that was all chattel slavery, and that was true throughout much of the world. In 1956, the United Nations redefined slavery to include practices similar to or like slavery. And they added basically four new areas. And certainly the most important of those is what you call debt bondage. That is when a person is held in debt and must work and works off that debt and in the process is not a free person. Loses control over his or her life. And that's a big one. And I'm trying to get into some of the examples. That will be the basis of much, indeed, of the slavery of the world today. A second one that was added was serfdom. Now, those of you who have ever studied medieval history, you'll ring a bell immediately. Indeed, it means the workers who are attached to the land. And serfdom is a person who is attached to the land and has no freedom to leave it. And indeed, if that property, if that land changes hands, the serf goes with the land, part of it. A third category that was added was forced marriage on the part of women. And indeed, when the husband of that, an example of that is, when the husband of that wife dies, she will be passed on to somebody else as a property, as a wife, through inheritance. Then the fourth thing that was added was child labor, and specifically children employed in abusive conditions. So the definition then of slavery has changed. That was 1956, if the UN adopted that definition of slavery. Are broader than it was before. Let me go through and give you some examples of slavery. Some of them have already been raised here. In fact, I'm going to start with Mauritania. I don't know who mentioned Mauritania. You mentioned Mauritania. Mauritania is a nation in the northwestern part of Africa, a population of about 2.2 million people. It is a desperately poor society that is ruled by a military dictatorship. And roughly 30% of the people in Mauritania are slaves, which means that somewhere around, I would guess, about 700,000 of the 2.2 million of them are slaves. The government, they are referred to as white Moors. They are the lighter skinned of the people. Essentially keep the darker skinned as slaves. This is traditional, what I would call chattel or traditional slavery. They generally would inherit their position, remain in that position throughout their life, and they know no other way of life. It was continual. They tend not to be abused. They work for their master, and they are obligated entirely to their master. So this is one of the traditional forms of slavery that still exists.
Yes. Are you going to go on more about Montana?
Go ahead, yeah, please.
Are we
no. I have notes here. Those few who flee, say, slavery in Mauritania are offered no protection or aid by authorities, and in fact generally are immediately returned to their masters. Go ahead.
Heard a bit on NPR about a month ago about several U.S. senators, including Tom DeLay, deals in Mauritania.
Been to Mauritania? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They have private parties and
not sure. Mauritania?
Yeah, Mauritania.
Why? Yeah. No, I mean, I say why, simply because it is. Desperately poor countries in the world.
And they're in cahoots with the clothing companies.
Okay. But that's one example of slavery. And I'm going to give you just two examples of slavery in Africa, because in giving you these examples, what I want to talk about more than anything is the breadth of it. Because, I mean, I want you to understand that, indeed, slavery is worldwide. And I'm not aware of, I mean, there are probably some nations that don't have slavery, but I don't know which one it would be, because it is that widespread. A second one I want to mention is in Ghana. Ghana is the old British colony of the Gold Coast, located in West Africa. And there are roughly 1,500 women and children there who are what are called Trakosi. Trakosi is a woman, or often a very, very young girl, who is taken from her parents and given to a religious shrine. When she is delivered to the shrine, she goes through a ceremony in which she is essentially given to it, and she becomes essentially a helpmate of the priest at the shrine. She will end up being the sexual partner, the laborer, and the farmer who helps to take care of the priest of that shrine. She is seized from her parents as a part of penance for evil done on the part of some of her or one of her relatives. So she is compensation. She is a penance for overcoming sin. And the relatives dare not return her or demand her return, because indeed it may bring evil into their own lives. The girl, who has done no wrong, earns nothing for her labor. And her family must provide her with food, clothes, and all basic needs for her life. So her maintenance costs the shrine nothing. She has to be maintained, indeed, by her own family. And the Trakosi, as is true with almost all slaves, are drawn from the very poor and powerless of society. Some remain there their entire lives. One who was released recently had become a Trakosi at the age of 5, and she was released at the age of 85. 85. She's been a slave Trakosi for some 85.
What country is this again?
Pardon?
What country?
This is Ghana, the Gold Coast. The old Gold Coast. That reminds me, a little bit of a digression, but if you ever take a look at a map of West Africa in the late 19th century, you will see the Ivory Coast, the Gold Coast, the Slave Coast, and there's one other coast that's not coming to mind right now. Those are all named Europeans gave those areas because those were the resources the Europeans were drawing from that area. So that's where the terms come from. And when the Gold Coast gained its independence, it was the first of Britain's African colonies to gain its independence in the 1950s. They dropped the Gold Coast, which had European and bad connotation, and took on the term Ghana. Ghana was an old term for an empire or a kingdom of Ghana that had existed in West Africa in the period from around 800 or 900 or so. 800 or 900. Okay, let's move on from Africa to take a look at, in this case, Britain. In 2004, on the west coast of Britain, in the west country coast, 20 men and women from China drowned when they were helping to gain, they were helping to harvest a form of a mollusk, a shellfish, from the beach there, and suddenly there was a change in the in the climate or something, and they ended up being drowned when the water flooded into the area. Now, what happened was that they were indentured, they were indebted of servants who had been brought into the area and were working off their debt. They lived under miserable conditions. The authorities arrested the people involved. This is in 2004, and I noticed within the last 3 or 4 months, those involved were sentenced to, I think it was 15 to 20 years in jail. Another place in England also occurred in 2004 when 50 migrant workers from Greece were also freed in Britain's West Country, where they had been working long hours harvesting flowers, unable to pay off the debts they had paid their masters for transportation from Greece to Britain. So this then qualifies as a slave. Now let's turn to the...
So is their debt just keep increasing because of the boards?
Right.
Increasing the debt so they never get out?
I mean, it's very difficult for them to get out. They will eventually, in many cases, release them. When do you think they will release them?
When they can't work anymore. Or they're so sick, they're going to die. Well, that'd be the same.
They will release them when they're physically no longer able to work or do not need them to work. Yes?
Well, in the colonial period, of course, they were indentured servants that came to this country. There was a contract.
There was a contract.
And it was like 7 years or something.
It was 3 or 7 years. The most common, I think, was 7 years. Yes.
Right. And these kinds of contracts are either phony or they are...
They are essentially what we would call open-ended. There's no restriction on them. That's very... indeed, early America, colonial America, for the first, 150 years of the United States, it'll be colonial history, we had more slaves or indebted people than we had free settlers. Because we were so desperate for labor. And obviously, that still ties into the present day. Because the reason most people are slaves today is one reason. Their labor.
Is that with a valid contract and specified terms? I mean, is that...
That's not slavery.
That's not slavery.
That's not slavery.
Okay.
No. We're not talking about, a valid contract, nor are we talking about people who are simply paid low wages. That's not slavery. I mean, if those people are getting the slave, if they're getting paid like Nike, for instance, or some others years ago, was accused, and indeed rightly accused, of hiring people in the areas, companies that used labor policy, to a certain extent, what you were mentioning, the various corporations, if they're paid low wages but indeed are free to leave, Even if free to leave means that they're going to die from starvation, that's not slavery. It's not much better, but it's not slavery because they have no control over their lives when you're talking about slavery.
So you aren't, this, not, I don't mean it's you, this 27 million doesn't count like Mexicans.
Right.
They don't count. They're not forced.
I mean, if some Mexicans, indeed, and there are some Mexicans that come into this country and make it into the country, let's say they're illegal, but then they are captured by somebody and say, you know, if unless you do this work, we're going to turn you over to authorities. And
they are slaves. But if they die in the desert trying to get across, and they're still on their own.
They're on their own.
They're not slaves.
No. Slavery means you have no control over your life.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
And they just broke that open in Minnesota right now, northern Minnesota and North Dakota. Are you aware of that?
No.
It was in the...
How long ago was this?
About 2 weeks ago.
No, I've been traveling for 3 weeks and I missed some news.
What was it? They were immigrants from China who had opened up some of these China buffet kind of restaurants in North Dakota and northern Minnesota. And there was one in Fargo and one in Grand Forks. Those are the two I know of. And they had, I don't know if the word was captured, but found out there were Mexican immigrants coming up, and they were illegal. And so they were hiring them for $70 a month, and they made them pay for the food and their housing. Somehow they were reported, and they broke it open, and these people were going to jail.
Yeah, those would be slaves, I think.
It was term slavery. And then what happens to these Mexican people? Who are trying to make a good living for themselves, webs and whatnot.
Yep.
Yeah. Very sad.
United States. And I'll just give you a few quick examples here. In 2004, authorities freed over 50 Peruvians on Long Island in New York, where they'd been held captive for 4 years. Okay. Forced to labor up to 16 hours a day. They were each working off $12,500 in debt for their transportation to the United States and were threatened with reprisals against their families in Peru should they try to flee. Now, this is something somebody may have pointed out already. The United States has a number of territories in the Pacific. And one of the areas where there's been a lot of abuse is in Samoa. Because manufacturers hire, let's say, the Chinese or Filipinos or others to come in there and to especially work in clothing factories or shoe factories. Now, the reason that this is prized by corporations is that under those circumstances, I think any goods coming out of Samoa are made in the USA. So in the label, in the shirt or whatever it is, it'll say made in the USA. And they have indeed arrested several factory owners over the years because of this condition. In Buffalo, New York in 2002, there were six people who were charged with trafficking over 40 Mexicans to work in that state, promising them decent pay and working conditions, but detaining them under armed guard until they worked off all of their costs of transportation and food. There are also examples from migrant farm workers in Florida being held in conditions of slavery. Now, somebody else mentioned here, and I want to introduce you, because it's one of the most important things, and that is the term of trafficking. Trafficking is the illegal importation of labor to work under coercive or slave conditions. And it is one of the biggest problems throughout the world today, trafficking. The United States government, this is United States itself, says the government estimates that there are 15 to 50,000 people trafficked into the United States Europe. 15,000 to 50,000 a year trafficked yearly into the United States. They are trafficked. They certainly, a main thing they end up being trafficked for is prostitution. Begging. Children washing windows on a car. See if I have any other.
Body parts.
That's something else. Yeah, I don't know that that's quite trafficking, but it could be. And we can get to that a little later, because that's particularly true out of Eastern Europe.
And that's what I meant by insidious. There are things going on that we have no idea that we're endorsing.
That's right. That's right. Selling trinkets, selling things. It was somewhere in Europe, in the last year or two when we were there, I remember you see a lot of children, especially washing windows. That's really common. And we must have been walking. We're usually bicycling, or maybe we'd stop the bike in the corner, and I looked around and I realized that there were two or three children out there washing windows, dropping the washing windows. And there was an adult on one corner, looking very carefully at those children. So I suspect in that case, and it was in the Mediterranean somewhere, I suspect those are trafficked children. Or children, if not trafficked, at least children that were being controlled. That.
So these are children that are taken from one country, or what would be the scenario?
They would be taken from a country. Some of them, indeed, are probably Roma, gypsies. You will see what are referred to as the Roma as frequently doing this.
So
now that would not necessarily be slavery in that case.
So where are
because they would be under the authority of their children.
Is it the U.S. you're still saying?
No.
No, this is Europe. No, I slipped into Europe here with that example specifically.
So where are the parents to these Roma children?
Probably watching them. No, they are. They are. I mean, they do it. That's the case. I mean, the Roma use their children that way.
Well, that's child abuse, not slavery.
Is it,
That's technically not slavery. Unless it is slavery when it is abusive. Even if it is the parents who are doing it and it is abusive, yes, then it does technically turn into slavery. Yes.
How is that different than abusive parents anywhere?
I think it's fair to say that a parent anywhere,
if their child
requiring abusive, labor. Intolerable labor on the part of the children, okay. That would constitute slavery.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that could occur in the U.S.
Yeah. Sure.
Which countries are the most trafficked? I know it's not verb into the United States.
In the United States, I'm not sure, but I would assume it's Mexico. I would assume it's Latin America are coming into the United States. The other place they would be coming from would be Eastern Europe. But I would assume not nearly as many come from Eastern Europe simply because of the distance involved.
So her question had to do with numbers.
No, what countries are they coming from?
Because, I mean, there's even in Seattle there's been stories of Chinese bound in tankers. Or a Chinese in a tanker. I mean, I don't know how much freedom.
When it comes to trafficking, that's particularly a problem in the old Soviet Empire. With the collapse of the Soviet Empire and related communist bloc countries, the infrastructure in those countries, especially social services, absolutely collapsed. And there is the case, especially women, as prostitutes. Are trafficked out of their countries. The one that probably percentage-wise has suffered the most is Albania. In the period from 1994 to 2004, a 10-year period, the estimate is 100,000 women and children trafficked from out of Albania. Albania is just across the Adriatic from Italy. And there are many, many stories I've read about the women who would be captured in Albania or elsewhere in that area. essentially captured, put on boats, and sped across the Adriatic, and then smuggled into, you know, you got a place like Italy or any place. You can always, I mean, these are big coastlines. Mm-hmm. You can always find areas, I mean, that you can smuggle them in.
So are they going against their will?
Against their will, yeah. If you're going, now, most of them would, a lot of them are against their will, a lot of them are with their will because they have been promised jobs in the West.
Is it usually more of that than people just being stolen off the street, or?
Oh, more of them would indeed be promised better jobs. Yes, yes. And most of them go under, what do you call it?
False pretenses.
What's that?
False pretenses.
Yeah, thank you, that's the term. Most of them would be recruited under false pretenses. Yes, by far. Most of them. Yeah.
In the U.S., people who are putting these slaves to work, who are they? I mean, what kind of, are they American citizens? Are they?
As far as I know, yes. I'm not aware that they, I mean, they would be American citizens, many of them. Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Money speaks loud. I mean, this is the bottom line is the need for labor, and they make a lot of money. There are other areas, and time is moving on here. The sex industry is at its greatest in Thailand. Thailand has gone through a real economic transformation over roughly the last 10 to 15 years. So there's a lot of money available suddenly in that country. So men particularly, whose standing in society is also measured partly by their sexual prowess, are constantly on the lookout for prostitutes. And in a society like Thailand that is undergoing such an absolutely rapid transformation economically, and I'm sure you're aware of that in today's world, you have a lot of areas that indeed where people make a huge amount of money in a short amount of time, but you have far greater numbers who are simply unable to adapt, become ill, or whatever it is in this new economy that can't take care of themselves. And those are the ones who are subject to enslavement. Those are the ones who are subject to becoming prostitutes because it is a way to survive economically. Now, in Thailand, certainly the vast majority of the girls who become prostitutes do it under their own free will. But there's a substantial number who do it unwillingly. In the northern part of Thailand, the Buddhists there regard women as inferior. And for them, indeed, to be prostituted is acceptable.
Chiang Mai.
Yes, for money. Yeah. And nowadays, it is partly this money is important because it's an attraction for material goods that are flooding into some of those areas that they never had before, were not accustomed to, and suddenly they're available for money. And that's become part of that moneyed economy, and that is one of the ways to do it, is through, in this case, prostitution. One example in the Middle East, camel racing, especially the United Arab Emirates. They are nuts when it comes to camel racing. I mean, that's an extraordinarily wealthy part of the world. And the ones they want to have racing their camels are young boys. The lighter the better, the smaller the better. So they recruit them, again, often under false pretenses to their parents. They recruit them especially from Pakistan and India. And these are 4, 5, 6-year-old kids who are taken, have probably never ridden an animal before in their life, to keep them on at the beginning. They are literally tied on the camel. And they do that until they get a little heavy. They're no longer good for racing. They then tend to go into the stable to help take care of the camel. When they are no longer needed is when they are removed. Now, within the last year, the United Arab Emirates government have agreed to indeed to stop this process. And they have started returning them. It's been within the last year. But what they're trying to force the United Arab Emirates government to do is to make certain that when they are returned to their society, whether it is India and Pakistan, that's where they particularly come from, first of all, they have to be returned to their parents, which is an extraordinarily difficult thing to do because these children would have had no idea where they came from. And then if they are returned, to rehabilitate them. I'll answer a little bit about South America. Probably the biggest example is in Brazil, with indebted servants, indebted labor, under, again, false pretenses primarily, but also simply, you know, you have to go and you have to pay for your transportation, into the area of the Amazon. And in the area of the Amazon, they go through two types of labor. One of the things is clear cutting of the forest in the area so that that area can be timbered and then be turned into lumber. The second thing is to take the lumber and turn it into charcoal. Charcoal, which is used in the iron industry and a number of other things, for example. And there's an estimate that about 20, I think you better check my numbers here, maybe. Yeah, it's an estimated 25,000 yearly are essentially enslaved in Brazil and primarily in the Amazon region. And then I say the most to the last, and that is India and Pakistan. Most of the slaves in the world today are in India and Pakistan. Primarily agricultural labor. In India, they are the enslaved, or what are called the Dalits, D-A-L-I-T-S, the Dalits. That is the bottom, that they are casteless. They are out of the caste, they are so low. Agricultural work is one of the key things, and this is something that is not only indebted, but that debt is passed from one generation to another. So in this case, it becomes almost a form of traditional slavery, because you can never pay it off, and it involves not simply, let's say, the mother and the father, it involves their children, the whole family is indebted. And the other thing has to do with the brick kiln, the making of bricks. I think in both countries, is frequently carried out by people who are in debt and are slaves. And that means that if your company does business in India or Pakistan, and it can be an internationally huge company, and if they build something, there is a reasonable chance they will end up with bricks that were made by slaves. So it's hard for us in the United States to escape benefiting from slavery. Somebody had their hand up.
Yeah, I was just to say the youngest daughter in many of the Muslim families in Afghanistan and in Pakistan are also slaves.
Okay.
They're not allowed to marry, and they're slaves to their family. They wait on them, they clean their house, they do all these things. The youngest daughter.
Just that's hope. Mom having another kid.
But those are some examples. I mean, worldwide. There are some differences between the old slavery, the chattel slavery, and the slavery today. One of the things is that today slaves are not owned. I mean, first of all, legally, they can't be owned because there is no slavery in the world. It is not legal anyway. under the old chattel slavery, slavery was not only common, it was perfectly acceptable. It was a legitimate form of property. It was in the United States until the 1860s. It was in Brazil until the 1880s. Let's see, other differences that I should mention here. Under chattel slavery, earlier slavery, the slaves tended to be expensive. Today they are inexpensive. They don't cost nearly as much today as a part of the entire cost and everything as they did centuries ago. Partly it is that, and especially true for the last few years, is the number of poor in many parts of the world have been exploded. And those are the ones that are subject to enslavement.
So would you be saying that a higher percentage of the world population is in more poverty?
Well, the population of the world continues to grow, too. Right. So whether it's a greater population, greater amount, I don't know. I don't know anybody.
Jesus said the poor have always been among us.
They've always been. Yes. No, they have. That's right. That's right.
So how much worse is it to be poor in poverty, no matter what, or be a poor slave?
The poor has, who is not a slave, has no control over his or her life. No control. That's the big thing that distinguishes a slave from one who is not a slave.
Legal.
They can all be poor. I mean, you know, that's, the difference is, indeed, one has no choice. That's the difference. Another difference is that under chattel or earlier slavery, the slavery tended to be long-term. Today, slavery is frequently short-term because they're used, and once they are no longer useful, they're dispensed with. Because to keep them would simply involve more expense to get rid of them. And also, under the old slavery, profits tended to be low. Today, profits are high, much higher percentage-wise than it was earlier.
When they get rid of them, they just turn them loose, or do they...
Turn them loose.
They don't dispose of them.
Get rid of them? No. Well, and see, that's one of the things that authorities always have trouble, I shouldn't say always, but frequently have trouble getting slaveholders or apprehending them, because first of all, in some societies, in some areas, in Mauritania, for instance, or certain areas in India, they've only known a life of being a slave. They know nothing else. So if indeed they are free, they may not recognize. It's no choice for them. If you're freed in Mauritania, you could never get a job. And that would be true in a lot of situations.
So they don't recognize freedom.
There are certainly instances when they would not recognize.
I mean, we can decide on a legal basis whether they qualify for slavery or not, but life doesn't change for them whether they are or not.
And that's true of slavery. The United States has been on this kick for a long time, too. We're going to introduce democracy to different parts of the world.
Right.
Well, I mean, frankly, they go to a lot of places in the world and they say, you've got democracy, it means nothing.
Right.
I mean, to operate in democracy means that there has to be some remarkably sophisticated institutions that support. And the same way in a slave society, to move from a slave society to a non-slave society, or move from being a slave to a non-slave, that doesn't happen overnight. I mean, you have to have other support and different things.
Yeah? In the example of, say, a sweatshop, there's a factory where people are held in slavery.
There's a
factory manager. I assume he answers to some middleman, and that person answers to the corporation. So who's going to be legally?
Can you
rewrite?
Who can be liable against a sweatshop? You have the people who are the laborers on the bottom, and there are several people, the person directly in charge, and you'll have other middle people all the way out into Angel France. For instance, it might be a corporation at the top. Who is responsible? Well, in the United States, I mean, normally you would say, ultimately the buck stops at the top. It doesn't. That's the theory we like to think, but in fact, frequently in our society, in many instances that way, the person at the top is not the one who is charged. I mean, it could be there, it could be in the United States military. We've had a number of situations where indeed the one at the top is not ultimately the one who's responsible, even though in theory he or she is supposed to
be. So what are usually the levels of middlemen? Do they deal with a legitimate person in, say, Philippines from the government or whatever, or business, and they can just go solve that from there? Or how many levels
okay.
are there?
Let's put it this way.
What was the question?
Wondering about the U.S. corporation or somebody dealing in the Philippines with labor and things like that. They would certainly... I'm not that well acquainted with how they would work. But let's put it this way. Another way to look at it is that there are corporations in the United States, there are corporations elsewhere in the world, in India, that do not know that indeed they are using goods, they are buying goods produced by slaves. Because the difference between where the goods are made and where they are consumed is so great that indeed there is what you could call almost a disconnect.
Right.
And that's true for a long, long time. I mean, this happened once you had the expansion of society. I mean, once goods were not immediately produced and consumed on the same site, you started having more middle people involved, and you have a disconnect. Common in 19th century industrial Europe, and the problems that occurred there. Somebody,
is it illegal for United States-based corporations buy goods that are produced by slaves?
I think so.
If slavery is
but slavery is not
illegal.
Pardon me?
There is no such thing as slavery. No, legally. I mean, I'm
not. You just made you understand my question.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Is it legal for the United States corporation to purchase goods or gain goods that are produced by slaves?
Correct.
No, I'm
not. I bet it's legal.
You think it is legal? I'm not sure.
Well, if it doesn't exist...
Well, yeah. I know, but this is an old... If you want to... I can talk about this more on Wednesday in my book, because that is what the Portuguese used.
Yes.
They kept saying, we have no... They argued ad nauseum. We have no slaves because it is illegal. And they believed it.
Well, our corporations do too. Mm-hmm.
Yes. What? Okay, we have about 9 minutes. Let me see what else we're going to take a look at. Okay, what can we do about it? Let's end. We'll talk a little about that. What can we do about addressing this problem of slavery in the world today?
Be careful of what we buy.
Now, how are you going to know? You're right, and that's a very good point. That's a very good response. Be careful of what you buy. How are you going to know? Keep in mind, I have no idea, but I'll tell you, you have to look long and hard today of anything you buy that is made in the United States. Most of it comes from overseas. I actually found pair of my shorts that were made not in the U.S., they're made in Mongolia. That's the only one I found. That's my thing, made in Mongolia. And you know, you mentioned this about, you know, be careful what you buy. We bought, my wife and I bought for a few years, we buy many of our things through Lands' End. And we continued to get their magazines long after we had been buying clothes. We didn't buy them anymore. We just gave up. And I went through a magazine, and I actually found, I think it was two things in this, what, 200-page magazine from Lands End, two things made in the United States. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't go through all the way. That was just kind of flipping pages. But two things made in Lands End, which is, you know, and how do you find out? Paul, go ahead.
John DeGraff, who was a documentary maker, was just in the Village last week. And he just made a video, it'll be on PBS, called Buyer Be Fair, as opposed to Buyer Beware.
Yeah.
And if you go to www.buyerbeware.org, you can find out what that is. And there's lots of resources to tell us what some of these products are. And there's also, the video is out now. It's an hour long. And I don't think we have it in the Village, but I know you can go to that site and get it. And it'll answer a lot of them. It's Buyer Be Fair. And it's about fair trade.
It's Buyers Be Fair. Is that what you said?
Buyer Be Fair.
Buyerbefair.com?
Yep. Okay. BUYERBEFAIR.
Yeah, buyerbe.
.org.
I mean, that is one of the key things is, first of all, to understand what you are buying. Now, that's not always easy. Now, one of the things that certainly many of you probably engage in is fair trade goods, commodities. The coffee, tea, and cocoa is probably the most common of the basic things we drink and eat that are fair. You can buy them fair trade. There are a lot of them out there, equal exchange, and a whole bunch of them, and they're very good. It does take work to find out what goods are produced under legitimate conditions. That's one thing.
And then they're a little bit more expensive, so the...
they are, but that's fine. I mean,
it's fine if you have the money, but for the people that shop Walmart of necessity, it doesn't help.
Right.
Can't do that.
But a lot of us can indeed afford to pay a little bit more for what? Yeah.
Well, the tricky thing is to once you find the country, that doesn't tell you much. I do a lot of work with China, and China gets a lot of bad press. But there are a lot of very, very up-to-date, clean factories. People work legitimate hours. So just because it says made in China, you shouldn't bring up sort of this image of a handful of sweatshop opportunities that get a lot of press.
That's right. That's right. And that's true. That's why I'm saying it takes work.
You know, related to that is, I just thought of this too. You can get these if you belong to an organization that's nonprofit, like a church. You can get these videos for $29. If you go to the video itself, they're like $200. But DeGraff has made sure that schools, churches, can get them for. So now you can spread the word. It's not just the
And also,
I don't know that Norm has its ELCA office, and I don't know if that, but it would make sense.
But didn't it also say that you should call your own PBS stations and tell them to play it, to get it, to present it.
Mm-hmm. Spread the word that way.
Let me mention two or three more things. We have only 2-3 minutes here, and I'll go through a little thing, then we can talk a little bit more. Another thing is to, when it comes, if you invest money, there is now you can put your money in what is called socially responsible investment. You can find a lot of brokers, a lot of agents who deal with that nowadays. There are indeed funds that are set up specifically that will screen out these problems. And if you invest money, that is certainly one of the things to do. And that also a part of that is a growing use of shareholder petitions today, where an individual can't do that, but you get some citizens' organizations that pool their money so that indeed when they present a petition, if they can actually corral, let's say, 10%, it at least forces the corporation to deal with it because they don't want to have bad press. Some of these things. Contribute financially to an organization fighting slavery worldwide. The most important of these is called Anti-Slavery International. It was founded in London in 1839. It is the oldest continuously living civil rights, human rights, anti-slavery society in the world.
What was it called?
Anti-Slavery International. And you can simply type that in under Google and it will come up. There is a sister organization in the United States called Free the Slaves. I visited their headquarters in Washington, D.C. They're a very small organization, no more than four or five. I hope they survive. I know Anti-Slavery International much better in Britain than London. But those are the two I'm acquainted with that are good organizations. Another thing is to become knowledgeable about slavery today. I've tried to inform you a little bit of that. There's one other book I want to mention that I ordered for the bookstore, and it's Kevin Bale's book, and there are five or six copies over there, called Disposable People. And much of the information I had today, or at least a chunk of information, comes from this book, Disposable People. A really, really good book. Written in about 1999 or 2000, something like that. It's available in the bookstore. Pick a look at it. Another thing is to actually put pressure on politicians to make anti-slavery, to put it high on their list of priorities. It's not very high now. It was Kevin Bale or somebody else who said, you know, that they're far more concerned of making certain that Prince's or Michael Jackson's CDs are not pirated than to stop people being trafficked into a country. That's not unique to today. I mean, that's been true. I've studied British history over the years, and a little bit of American, but British history, Britain has almost always put a higher priority on protecting property in comparison to protecting human life.
Now, did you say Britain?
I was Britain. I'm more acquainted with Britain.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, American law very much reflects British law. That's where we got our law. Now, we're going to stop. Time is up.
Yep.
I'd love to talk more. We're going to talk afterwards, but they're going to turn that little machine off, I think, right over there now. So that's it, folks.